James Barty in Washington wishing you will have a great weekend.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Russian authorities are opening more military enlistment offices near Russia's borders in an apparent effort to intercept Russian men of fighting age who are trying to avoid getting called up to fight in Ukraine. The Saratov regional office and officials said that a new draft office opened Thursday at a checkpoint in Russia's border with Kazakhstan. Another military enlistment center was to open at a crossing in Astrakhan, a region also on the border with Kazakhstan, earlier this week. Makeshift Russian draft offices were set up near a border crossing into Georgia and on Russia's border with Finland. Russian officials say they would hand call up notices to all eligible men who were trying to leave the country. Russia planned to annex more of Ukraine on Friday in an escalation of the seven-month war that was expected to isolate the Kremlin further, draw more international punishment, and bring Ukraine extra military, political, and economic support. The annexation and planned celebratory concerts and rallies in Moscow and the occupied territories would come just days after voters supposedly approved Moscow-managed referendums that Ukrainian and Western officials have denounced as illegal, forced, and rigged. A Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, told reporters Thursday that four regions of Ukraine, Luhansk, Donetsk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia, would be folded into Russia during a Kremlin ceremony attended by Russian President Vladimir Putin, who's expected to give a major speech. Peskov said the region's pro-Moscow administrators would sign treaties to join Russia in the Kremlin's ornate St. George's Hall. There is more at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com. This is VOA News. South Korea, U.S., and Japanese warships have launched their first anti-submarine drills in 5 years after North renewed ballistic missile tests this week. South Korea says Friday's one-day trilateral training off the Korean Peninsula's east coast is meant to cope with a North Korean push to advance its ability to fire missiles from submarines. North Korea has been building bigger submarines, including a nuclear-powered one, and testing sophisticated missiles that can be fired from them in recent years. The North's recent five missile launches, the first such test in a month, also came before the U.S. and after U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris visited South Korea. Meanwhile, U.S. President Joe Biden said on Thursday telling leaders from more than a dozen Pacific Island countries that the U.S. was committed to bolstering its presence in the region and becoming a more collaborative partner as they face the existential threat of climate change. The president addressed the leaders who gathered in Washington for a summit as the White House looks to improve relations in the Pacific amid growing U.S. concern about China's growing military and economic influence. Biden delivered his remarks as his administration unveiled its Pacific strategy, an outline of the White House's plan to assist the region's leader on pressing issues like climate change, maritime security, and protecting the area from overfishing. The administration also pledged that the U.S. would add $810 million in new aid for Pacific Island nations over the next decade, including $130 million on efforts to stymie the impacts of climate change. Hurricane Ian has regained some strength after exiting Florida and taking aim at South Carolina. The National Hurricane Center said the storm spent only a few hours as a weakened tropical storm over Florida before it spun up into a Category 1 hurricane on Thursday in the Atlantic Ocean. Rescue crews were wading through water and using boats to rescue Florida residents stranded in the wake of Hurricane Ian. The Orange County Fire Department posted videos and photos of crews in a flooded neighborhood in the Orlando area. At least four people in Florida were confirmed dead on the state's eastern coast. Forecasters have issued a hurricane warning for coastal South Carolina and southeastern North Carolina ahead of another landfall Friday. Recapping our top story, Russian authorities are opening more military enlistment offices near Russia's border in an apparent effort to intercept Russian men of fighting age who are trying to avoid getting called up to fight in Ukraine. There is more at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Friday, September 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Dorfo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. seeks to strengthen Pacific island security to counter China's growing influence in the region.
We're also announcing more than $110 million in expended U.S. programs to improve the lives of Pacific Islanders, which includes more than $330 million in new investments.
Brazilians are set to elect a new president on Sunday amid fears of political violence.
Brazilians head to the polls Sunday to vote in a contest between current President Jair Bolsonaro and former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva.
And the Vatican imposes disciplinary sanctions on Nobel Peace Prize-winning bishop over allegations of sexual abuse of minors. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia is planning to annex more of Ukraine on Friday. The move represents an escalation of a seven-month war that is expected to isolate the Kremlin further, draw more international punishment, and bring extra support to Ukraine. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters Thursday that four regions of Ukraine, Luhansk, Donetsk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia, will be folded into Russia during a Kremlin ceremony attended by President Vladimir Putin, who is expected to give a major speech. Peskov said the region's pro-Moscow administrators will sign treaties to join Russia in the Kremlin's St. George's Hall. Ukraine and the West have described the referendum as a, quote, sham, unquote. U.S. President Joe Biden told Pacific Island leaders on Thursday that the security of the United States and the world depended on security in their region. Biden spoke at the State Department, where the United States is hosting more than a dozen leaders and representatives of Pacific Island countries as part of an effort to stem China's expanding influence in the region.
We're also announcing more than $110 million in expended U.S. programs to improve the lives of Pacific Islanders, which includes more than $130 million in new investments to support climate resilience and to build sustainable blue economies in the Pacific Islands, prepare for climate impacts on public health and food security, and to strengthen sustainable development, and also to build a better early warning capacity to predict, prepare for, and respond to climate hazards. This is going to build on approximately $375 million in climate programs we currently have in the region. We're also taking several important diplomatic steps, and I'm proud to announce that following appropriate consultations, we will recognize the Cook Islands and Niue sovereign states. And we look forward to successfully concluding negotiations for a compact, free association with three of our closest partners in the region, the Federated States of Micronesia, the Republic of the Marshall Islands, and the Republic of Palau.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. In 10 U.S. households, food is insecure, and that has been the case for decades. On Wednesday, in the first conference of its kind in 50 years, the White House convened experts to discuss how the world's largest provider of international food assistance can better feed its own. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
Hunger can be hard to see in the world's wealthiest nation. But right now, 9 million American children are hungry, as President Joe Biden said Wednesday as he opened the White House's first hunger and nutrition conference in 50 years. That's a big deal.
Just last week at the United Nations, I talked about commitments we were making to tackle food insecurity worldwide. Because in every country in the world, in every state in this country, no matter what else divides us, if a parent cannot feed a child, there's nothing else that matters to that parent. If you look at your child and you can't feed your child, what the hell else matters?
Hunger is a global phenomenon, and the U.S. is hardly the hardest hit. The latest Global Food Security Index ranks the U.S. 13th worldwide. Finland tops the index, while Syria and Haiti rank last. Biden's conference sets the ambitious goal of ending hunger and reducing diet-related diseases in the U.S. by 2030. On Wednesday, he announced $8 billion in public and private sector commitments, and also plans to increase access to free school meals and expand food-related government benefits for children and families. Funding from Congress is far from assured. Republicans typically favor non-governmental means to address societal ills. Even hunger advocates note that Washington can't do it alone. Noreen Springstead is executive director of Why Hunger, a New York-based global organization. She spoke to VOA via Zoom.
But I will say it is a very ambitious goal to end hunger by 2030. There's lots of things that the federal government can do, but it really has to be a joint effort of federal government, state government, local government, corporations, philanthropy, and all of civil society to do this.
And the challenges cross borders. Food insecurity increased during the pandemic and after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Danielle Nirenberg leads a nonprofit called Food Tank. She spoke to VOA via Zoom.
The pandemic and the war against Ukraine have shown us that global supply chains are very fragile, and that if we're totally dependent on them, that we're putting ourselves at risk. And what we need is more investment from governments and the private sector in regional and local supply chains.
And Springstead said, making food itself cheaper is just part of the challenge.
Economic justice really has to be a pillar here, and increasing the minimum wage to one that is really a living wage and looking across the country, because it can be varying depending on where you live. So that's number one.
For a day, Washington focused on hunger at a time of skyrocketing food prices. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Anita. UN agencies are calling for ways to ensure food security as the United Nations marked the International Day of Awareness of Food Loss and Waste on Thursday. Lisa Schneider reports for VOA from Geneva.
A UN Environment Program report says over 930 million tons of food waste were generated in 2019. The chief of UNEP's Energy and Climate Branch, Mark Rutka, says that represents about 20% of available food.
There's evidence that household food waste is generated at a similar per capita level in all countries, regardless of country income level. So households in average generate about 74 kilograms per person per year in food waste.
It has serious implications, given the UN's latest estimates that 828 million people globally are going hungry. Food and agriculture operation findings indicate 14% of the world's food is lost after harvest. An estimated 17% is wasted in retail and at the consumption stage. FAO Senior Enterprise Development Officer Rosa Roll calls food loss and waste a global problem that has significant impact on climate, for food security, and for the sustainability of agri-food systems.
Over the past 2 years, our agri-food systems across the globe have been disrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic, climate change, and the war in Ukraine, pushing millions of people into food insecurity, with hunger and malnutrition on the rise.
The FAO says food waste and loss accelerate climate change and harm the environment. It says about 31% of total greenhouse gas emissions, which lead to global warming, are attributable to the agri-food system. The UNEP says reducing food loss and waste could decrease methane emissions by 15% by 2030. It notes methane has more than 80 times the warming power of carbon dioxide over the first 20 years after it reaches the atmosphere. It says at least 25% of today's global warming by methane is caused by human action. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ethiopia's government-funded Human Rights Commission says security forces killed dozens of civilians following clashes with rebels in the country's Gambela region in June. Fred Hartau reports from Addis Ababa.
According to the state-appointed rights body's report, published Thursday, the killings happened after an hours-long gun battle on June 14th between regional security forces and militants from the Oromo Liberation Army and the Gambela Liberation Front. After the OLA and GLF militants withdrew from the city, Gambela regional security force members searched houses and targeted civilians, whom they accused of harbouring weapons and fighters, the Rights Commission said. The 13-page report concluded at least 50 civilians were killed individually and in mass extrajudicial executions by regional security forces between June 14 and June 16. The bodies were then buried en masse, with relatives denied access to them, said the commission, which also found that security force members had looted homes. At the time, a Gambela city resident told VOA that he could hear sporadic shooting from his home in the days following the rebel group's assault. Abela Dane, the Gambela office head for the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, said the killings took place in several locations across the city.
Some people were killed at their homes and some others were killed when they were walking on the streets of the town. For instance, one of the findings of our report showed that one special force in the city police of the regional government killed at least 11 civilians, all just in one house.
Abel added that several other people were taken to the local police commission, where they were subsequently killed. The report from the Human Rights Commission was based on interviews with 58 people, including eyewitnesses and relatives of victims. It also concluded that the OLA and GLF rebel groups killed 7 civilians while in the city, adding that 6 more people died after they were caught in crossfire. A message to a government spokesperson requesting comments went unanswered. Gambela's Regional Police Commission has said the rebels were responsible for the killings in the town. Fred Harter for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
In their most polarized election in decades, Brazilians are set to go to the polls on Sunday to elect a new president. They will choose between a leftist political returnee and current populist leader, President Jair Bolsonaro, who already has claimed election fraud if he loses. For VOA, Jan Bouchard reports from Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Brazilians head to the polls Sunday to vote in a contest between current President Jair Bolsonaro, a far-right populist facing economic, political and social upheaval, and former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the leftist head of Brazil's Works Party. Polls indicate the former president, commonly known as Lula, could win the election without needing a second round. Lula served as president from 2003 to 2010, and it's best known for enacting massive anti-poverty programs as president. Jailed for corruption before his conviction was annulled last year, and he was released from jail.
I proved the other time I was president that a worker without a university degree was capable of doing more for the people than the doctors who had already ruled this country.
Bolsonaro, known as anti-establishment and pro-business, has spent most of his first four-year term fighting a series of political, economic, and social crises, including a rise in political violence amid the liberalization of gun laws.
This is a country that has increasingly reduced violence by doing the opposite of what the left has always said. We are giving the right to the population to buy firearms.
At least 5 people have been killed since July in what were believed to be political assassinations. Bolsonaro also publicly campaigned against COVID-19 vaccinations as the virus killed more than 700,000 Brazilians. Under Bolsonaro, the number of people living in extreme poverty doubled. Almost 50% of Brazilians disapprove of his government, according to the public opinion surveys. Bolsonaro has suggested he won't accept the election results if he loses, and some fear post-election violence in the highly polarized country. The results of the elections are expected by Sunday night or early Monday. Yan Buixá, VOA News, São Paulo, Brazil.
In other news, the Vatican says it imposed disciplinary sanctions on Nobel Peace-winning Bishop Carlos Ximenez Belo following allegations he sexually abused boys in East Timor in the 1990s. The Vatican spokesman said the office that handles sex abuse cases received allegations, quote, concerning the bishop's behavior, unquote, in 2019 and within a year had imposed the sanctions. They include limitations on Belo's movements and exercise of ministry and prohibit him from having voluntary contact with minors or contact with East Timor. The statement says the measures were, quote, modified and reinforced, unquote, in November 2021. Belo is a revered East Timor independence hero, and the Catholic Church wields enormous influence in the Southeast Asian nation. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. 8 cheetahs have been brought from Africa to India this month to conserve a species that's become extinct in the South Asian country 7 decades ago. While the project is hugely challenging, conservationists say the benefits go beyond conserving the world's fastest land animal. If successful, it could help save neglected ecosystems such as grasslands. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi.
Eight cheetahs made the long journey from the southwestern African nation of Namibia to a park in central India this month. A dozen more are scheduled to come from South Africa next month. The ambitious transcontinental project aims to restore the world's fastest moving land animal in India, where it became extinct 7 decades ago. The challenges are immense. Foremost is to restore the ecosystems where the African cheetah can thrive. India's conservation efforts have long focused on preserving forests where animals such as tigers roam. Cheetahs, on the other hand, inhabit more open spaces such as grasslands. Smaller habitats in India could mean testing times for the African cheetah. Leopards, which prey on the animal, will never be far away and pose a threat to their cubs. Cattle graze here as rural populations often press into these lands. That raises risks of conflicts with humans. But conservationists are eyeing the immense potential benefits from restoring the cheetah's habitat. The hope is that if cheetahs make a comeback, so will several other endangered species. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has voiced optimism.
When cheetahs run again in Kuno National Park, the grassland ecosystem of the place will get restored. Biodiversity will increase further.
Reviving the cheetah's habitat could also help in tackling a pressing modern-day challenge, climate change.
And that report was by Anjana Patricia from New Delhi. Turkish pop star Gosen, dubbed the Turkish Madonna, faces jail as a crackdown on popular music broadens. The crackdown is seen by some as an attempt by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to court his religious base as elections loom and young people voice disaffection with the economy. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
One of Turkey's biggest pop stars, Gülşen, because of her music, dress and LGBT support, she's widely known as the Turkish Madonna. But Gülşen ended up in court and jail after a video of a private joke denigrating religious schools went public. Gülşen's jailing sparked outrage and a national campaign for her release. The US State Department expressed concern over her detention. Gülşen was eventually released, but faces prison if convicted on charges of inciting religious hatred. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, addressing a gathering, expressed support for Gülşen's prosecution. With elections less than a year away and Erdogan lagging in the polls, observers say he may be seeking to rally his religious base. This summer, Turkish authorities also banned many music festivals across Turkey, accusing them of corrupting youth. Pop music festivals, often drawing tens of thousands of people, have spread to Turkey's more conservative regions. With elections due next year and near 100% inflation, experts say young voters pose the most significant threat to Erdogan. Gülşen is due in court in October, with prosecutors demanding her imprisonment. Experts say such a move would play well among Erdogan's conservative base, but risks further alienating an increasingly disaffected youth as elections loom. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART, collided with its target, Dimorphos, of the Didymos-Dimorphos binary asteroid system on September 26th. The mission marked the first time a spacecraft was intentionally crashed into a celestial object to successfully test a method of planetary defense from near-Earth objects like asteroids and comets. Earth-based telescopes, as well as NASA's Hubble and James Webb Space Telescopes, captured images of DART crashing into the asteroid and the debris or ejecta that scattered off the space rock after impact. NASA says Hubble will continue to observe the asteroid system 10 more times over the next 3 weeks, and Webb will do the same over the coming months by using its mid-infrared instrument and near-infrared spectrograph. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Next up, a conversation with China Director of Human Rights Watch, Sophie Richardson, about the recent UN report concluding that Beijing's crackdown on Uyghurs and other Muslim groups in China's Xinjiang province amount to crimes against humanity. China tried to block, then delay publication of the findings, holding China accountable for its human rights abuses. Next on Press Conference USA, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including outraged protests, a fearful exodus, and acts of violence continue across Russia days after President Vladimir Putin announced a partial mobilization to call hundreds of thousands of reservists to fight in Ukraine. We'll examine this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs and counter Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Elections are a cornerstone of the democratic system of government. Attempts to target the U.S. electoral system are an attack on the United States' democratic values. It is therefore no surprise that the U.S. government takes any attempt to undermine or manipulate the American electoral system seriously. The Russian Federation has demonstrated determination in its attempts to undermine the democratic processes and institutions essential to the functioning of our democracy and that of other countries, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken. In response, the United States is sanctioning two individuals and four entities that support the Kremlin's global malign influence operations and election interference activities. Alexander Viktorovich Yanov, president and founder of the anti-globalization movement of Russia, uses his position and various companies to promote Russia's disinformation agenda and has worked with Russia's intelligence services to support organizations they believed would create socio-political disturbances in the United States. He is also the president and owner of Yanov Transcontinental and Domain Registrant of the website Stop Imperialism. Yanov was designated pursuant to Executive Order 14024 for having acted for or on behalf of the government of the Russian Federation. At the same time, the anti-globalization movement of Russia and Yanov Transcontinental were designated under Executive Order 14024 for being owned or controlled by Yanov. Stop Imperialism was also designated under Executive Order 14024 for having acted on behalf of Yanov. Natalia Valerievna Borlinova is the founder and president of the Center for Support and Development of Public Initiative Creative Diplomacy, also known as PCREDI or Creative Diplomacy. Both Borlinova and PCREDI are directly funded and directed by Russia's intelligence services, which also track the career paths and positions of participants in PCREDI-sponsored events. Borlinova was designated pursuant to Executive Order 14024 for having acted on behalf of the government of the Russian Federation. PCREDI was designated pursuant to Executive Order 14024 for having acted on behalf of the government of the Russian Federation and for being owned by Borlinova. The Kremlin has repeatedly sought to threaten and undermine our democratic processes and institutions, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Brian Nelson. The United States will continue our extensive work to counter these efforts and safeguard our democracy from Russia's interference.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.